But today, we're really excited because we've got with us Steph, who will come up in just a moment. And Steph is going to talk to us about that whole idea of sort of environmental justice and that sort of thing. And she's representing a charity today called Arocha. I think that's how you say it. So can you put your hands together and welcome Steph as she comes to speak to us today.
Great. Well, thank you so much for inviting me today. I'm really excited to be here and talking on this topic. So I just want to, explain what I want to talk about today. So like we've just said, I want to think a bit more about the environment. And as I'm sure you're all aware, there are so many environmental issues that we're bombarded with on an almost daily basis at the moment. We hear more and more about climate change that's been really brought to the forefront again at the moment by the school strikes that have been happening all over the country and all over the world, actually. And then, you know, all the way through to things like the problem with plastics and them ending up in the oceans. We hear so much about that at the moment. And there's so many other things, and I think that can seem quite overwhelming. So what I really want to do today is for us to spend a bit of time thinking about what it might look like for us as Christians to engage with some of these environmental issues. And whether it's something that we should engage with and whether it's something that we can engage with in a distinctive way as people who know God. And so the four questions that I want to explore are these. Firstly, what is God's relationship to the planet? What is our relationship as humans to the planet? What is our relationship as children of God to the planet? And finally, given all of that, what on earth does it look like to live as God's children in the light and in the face of these modern environmental issues? So that's really what we're going to cover, I hope. But who am I to actually talk about this? So we've just mentioned charity, and no one knows how to pronounce their name. I say Arocha. I used to work for them in Canada, and people in Canada say Arocha. But it's actually just, it's the Portuguese for, I think, the rock. And it's really getting at the point of who God is. And the organization, it's an environmental organization, and they really seek to care for the planet on the basis of their faith. And so they believe that God is the foundation for the work that they do. Okay, so I used to work for Arocha, and I spent a lot of time working in conservation in particular, out in Bulgaria and then Canada. And then I spent more and more time talking to landowners and working with people to explain why I thought salmon, for example, might be important and worth taking care of. And then I spent so much time in talking to people that I ended up in scientific communication instead. So I work with a lot of young people mostly, talking about all sorts of different areas of science. And I really enjoy thinking about that within the context of our faith as well, because if we're seeking to put God at the center of our lives, then we really want to think about what that looks like for every other area of our life and everything else that we love and care about. Okay, so who am I apart from that? Well, one of my earliest memories is snail hunting with my mum after the rain in Manchester. So I'm from Manchester, it rains a lot, and I'm pretty sure that mum just got really bored inside with two young children. And so once it stopped raining, she was like, quick, I'm gonna take them outside and we're gonna make snail hunting a really exciting adventure because it's free and that's great. So I used to do that a lot. I used to spend a lot of time outside. And my family are very outdoorsy people. So a lot of my memories are being dragged on walks that I didn't really want to go on through fields that said things like, beware of the bull, and I didn't want to go through the field. And my family, my parents moved before I was born up to Manchester from Hitchin because they wanted to live closer to some hills, and there are not very many around here. So they moved up to near the Peak District and near the Lake District and all those beautiful areas. And so I actually spent a load of my time, though quite miserable, being dragged around beautiful places. And then when I was four, we moved to Oklahoma. And I have a twin brother. And if you ask him about the things that we did and the places that we visited while we lived in America, he can tell you really sensible things like where we went and the name of the town and the things we did there. And if you ask me, and I'm the same age as him, I have no excuse, all I can say is things like, I saw a black and red and yellow snake on that day, and I saw a pelican at some point, and all I can tell you is about the animals and the science museum and things like that. And so for a long time, I've really had this interest in nature, and gradually I've come to really appreciate, having spent a lot of time being dragged through the mud by my parents, I've spent a lot of time starting to think about how beautiful and how wonderful it all is. And that resulted in me being very curious about nature. I got into lots of scrapes as a kid because I wanted to know how things worked. So another silly example is when we were in Oklahoma, I decided that I was going to catch a chipmunk because they're really cute and fluffy and stripy, and why wouldn't you want a chipmunk as a pet? So I decided this chipmunk was going to be my best friend, and I told my parents I was going to catch a chipmunk. And again, humouring me, they were like, she's five, she's not going to catch a chipmunk, but it will keep her busy for a bit. So they let me go, and I caught a chipmunk, and I brought it home, and I let it go in the house, and it caused chaos, and my mum was shrieking about maybe it has rabies and everything, and eventually it left the house because it didn't really want to be there, and one day I'll get over it, but, you know, if you fancy praying for me at the end, I'm still a little bit sad about not having a pet chipmunk. So really what I want to say about that is it never surprised anyone when I decided to go and study natural sciences at Cambridge, and particularly specialising in zoology, which is the study of animals, taking some of that curiosity and that joy that I'd had from growing up spending a lot of time outside and watching things going on in nature, and using, so I, you know, taking that forwards into a bit more of my adult life and thinking a bit more about, the world around me and what I could do to help it. What did surprise people was that I became a Christian whilst I was studying natural sciences in Cambridge, and that's partly because I met some wonderful Christians who loved me well and could talk to me about all of the questions that I had about faith. And it's also partly because I was studying something incredibly beautiful. I was studying this world that I just thought was astounding and astonishing, and it left me with questions that science couldn't answer, like, but why is it so beautiful, and what even is beauty, and where does that come from? And so for me, being outside in nature, something that's always been special to me, but becoming a Christian really cemented it as a place of easy closeness to God. I don't know about you, lots of people find different ways and different times where they feel particularly close to God. And being out in nature, for me, it's something that calls me to worship him. And I feel like I've had that sense for way, way longer than I've been a Christian. But in becoming a Christian, my faith really started to make sense of what I felt when I looked at nature. So, like I've said, since studying at uni, spent time working in conservation, and now I spend most of my time talking about it instead. So here I am. So, back to that first question. What is God's relationship to this planet? I've touched on it a little bit. I don't know how to work this. Yeah, I win. Well, first thing first, God's relationship to the planet. He made it, okay? He is the maker of heaven and earth and the sea and everything in the heavens and everything on the earth and everything in the sea. It's all his. And that's incredibly exciting. And that kind of, for me, helps me to understand why I feel called to worship when I look at the planet. And it's because I'm looking at something incredible that God has done. So his planet glorifies him. The heavens declare the glory of God. and so does the earth, and so does the sea, and everything that we can look at within it. It helps us to learn a little bit more about the maker of that. So when I look around me, I'm seeing God's work, and it glorifies him. Okay, next. And it looks pretty much the same. Not only did he make it, but it's still his. He hasn't wandered off. He's not gotten bored of it. He's still here. He's still involved. He still cares about it. It's his property. And so for me, you know, I work with a lot of children, and we do a lot of thinking about how we respect other people's property. And so for me, that's a really helpful first step in starting to think about how I might relate to God's planet. But firstly, he made it, and it's his. Okay, he made it, it's his, and more than that, he really loves it. He loves all of it. It says here, and this is talking about, so it's in Genesis, it's in that beautiful story, in that pattern of forming and filling of God's creation. And at the end of each day, he sees that it's good. But when it's complete, he sees that it's very good. He looks at the whole thing, the big picture, and he is really pleased with it. He's really pleased with all of it. He doesn't just look at humans and think, they're brilliant. I don't know what I was thinking when I made worms. Okay? He looks at it all in its fullness and in its completion, and he is really, really pleased with it. And I think that's something that can sometimes confuse us as humans, because we obviously have a very human view of the world. When we look at everything, we tend to think of it in terms of, is that useful to me? How can I use it? What can I do with it? You're thinking about yourself, and that's not particularly wrong, that's not a criticism, but actually, God loves all of the things. And the value of all of those creatures is not in whether it's actually all that useful to humans. Its value is in God making it and God loving it. And I really like this. This is talking about, it's God talking about to Noah about what he should put on the ark. Okay, and he says, you are to bring into the ark two of all living creatures, male and female, to keep them alive with you. Two of every kind of bird, of every kind of animal, and of every kind of creature that moves along the ground. He's not saying, oh, bring cows and pigs and horses because they're handy. Don't bother bringing slugs and snails. He's saying everything. And again, this is really getting across that sense of God made it, he loves it, and he loves all of it. And its value is not in whether or not it's useful for us. Its value is in it being part of God's wonderful creation. Okay, so God's relationship to the earth. Like I've said, he made it, it's his, and he loves all of it. What about humanity's relationship to the earth? Well, firstly, in this verse, the Lord God formed a man from the dust of the ground. That's about as connected to the earth as you can be. You're made from the earth. And I find that really interesting, actually, because I think as Christians, we sometimes go down the route of only thinking of ourselves as spiritual beings, and we worry about it when people start saying things like, oh, you're connected to the earth, because that sounds like this weird hippie earth worship stuff. No, I don't think that we should worship the earth, but I think it's really exciting that we are connected to the earth. We are connected to this incredible creation of God's. We are part of his wonderful creation. And like every other living creature on Earth, we're made of carbon. There you go, don't worry, I'm not going to go down a science lesson. We're made of carbon, and we're complex, and we're beautiful, and we're wonderful. And so we're like every other thing on the planet. I'll come onto some of our differences in a bit. But as humans, we get to fit into this. We have a place here, and that's exciting. I find that really precious. Okay, so first thing, that is the first thing of how humans relate to the earth. We are made from it. We are part of it. And we also need it to survive. And that's not taking away the role of God within it, okay? I believe that God gives us every good thing that we need. But I think that some of the way that he's done that is through allowing nature to provide abundantly for us. And so here it says, the Lord God made all kinds of trees grow out of the ground, trees that were pleasing to the eye and good for food. And the Lord God commanded the man, you are free to eat from any tree in the garden, apart from one. We'll move past that today. And so God provides for us using nature. And it's not just the Bible that says that. There's a huge amount of work done within conservation science at the moment to learn more about what nature does for us. And it's got a boring kind of scientific term. It's called ecosystem services. But the bottom line is that actually, nature gives us an astonishing amount of the things that we need. It does it for free. So, for example, pollinators, you've got all the weird little insects that bite you or sting you. A huge amount of those guys, like the bees, are pollinators, and they pollinate our crops, our food crops. So things like wheat, all the way through to avocados, depending on how millennial you are, all of those things are pollinated by insects. And that's really useful. And so imagine if we lost the insects, then we'd have to find another way of pollinating those crops. And we're creative, we're intelligent people, and I think that we could find a way, but it would be much more expensive, and it would take a lot more time. And at the moment, it's something we don't have to worry about or think about, because that's nature giving us something. Another example that I like, because it doesn't seem all that useful, is things like swamps. You look at a marsh and you're like, well, that's just a bit muddy and gross, and there are maybe some flies, mosquitoes and things living in it. What's the point of that? So as humans, we tend to then think, well, I'll drain it, okay, and I'll build some nice houses on it, and that will be much nicer. And then it rains a lot, and you've actually taken away something that was a natural flood defense. Because marshes are really, really good at sucking up lots of water. They act like a giant sponge. And so this thing that didn't look all that pretty, it didn't really seem to serve much of a purpose, actually does serve a massive purpose for us and gives us something that is really useful that might protect human lives and certainly protect human livelihoods. And so we are connected to the earth in this incredible way, in that God formed us from the earth. And at the same time, we need the earth. Like every other living creature does, we need it for our survival. So much that helps humanity to flourish has been provided for free by nature. Okay, so we're made from the earth, or at least whatever that particular verse is trying to convey, we're deeply connected to the earth in some way, and we depend on the earth. So it makes good sense for humans, whether they know God or not, to want to take care of the planet. You see all these signs at the climate strikes at the moment, there is no planet B, and it's talking about how precious the Earth is to us. And everyone can see that in some way. But is that the full picture for us as Christians? Just taking care of something because we're afraid that if we don't take care of it, then it won't take care of us. Is that all that we can really say about this? And no, I don't think so. We're Christians, we're children of God, and that identity and that relationship with God and that understanding and awareness of God, that has an impact on all of our other relationships, doesn't it? It impacts how we choose to relate to our work colleagues, how we choose to relate to our parents or our children. And it also has an impact on the way that we relate to the planet. So let's have a think about that. Okay, So, back to Genesis. So this is very, very early on, and God says to himself, "Let us make mankind in our image, in our likeness, so that they may rule over the fish in the sea and the birds in the sky, over the livestock and all the wild animals, and over all the creatures that move along the ground." Great. So we're made in the image of God. That's the first thing of thinking about how, as children of God, we relate to the planet. So we are made from the earth. We are connected to all other living things on the earth. But we are also uniquely made in the image of God. And this is a profound difference. I think that's fascinating. And there's so many things that we could say about being made in the image of God. For example, well, if we're made in the image of Creator God, then that makes us creative beings. That makes us problem solvers. That makes us imaginative and wonderful. And that's exciting and hopeful for thinking about environmental issues and what we could do. Like, we are empowered by being made in the image of God. But more than that, what I find fascinating about this verse is it says, "Let us make mankind in our image, in our likeness, so that they may rule." This, then God, after this, in like the next couple of verses, then turns around and he basically says to mankind that he's made, "Go and rule. Go and rule over all of these things." And this is, it's the first thing that God says to us. It's this incredible commission. It's kind of the first great commission. It's an invitation and a call that says, because you are made in my image, I am asking you to go and rule over all of this world, all of this planet, and reflect my image, be my image as you do that. So that is reflecting his love, reflecting his creativity and his kindness and his goodness, and ruling in a way that is responsible and wise and doesn't seek to exploit and destroy. And I think it helps us to see that, so this instruction to come and to rule over is a way, if we obey that, it's a way of honoring and glorifying God by helping his beautiful creation to flourish. That creation that declares his glory, if we as Christians want to glorify and honor God, we want to make sure that his creation is something that can carry on singing his praises. And I think it's also a really interesting verse, you know, go, you're made in my image so that you might rule, because it makes it really, really clear that taking care of the planet was never an add-on. It's never an optional extra for a particular brand of Christian that enjoys getting muddy and likes watching birds. It's something that is a central aspect of our lives as we seek to love and honor and obey God. And it's a key way. So taking care of the planet, relating to the planet in this loving and ruling and stewarding way is a key way of us reflecting God's image to the earth and to the other people of the earth who don't yet know God. Okay. So we are made in the image of God so that we can rule. And that applies to all of us as children of God. And we're aware of it because we're children of God. And the second thing that I want to draw out, there's so much I could say about being God's children. The second thing I want to draw out is this verse that I'm sure we're all familiar with that says, when Jesus gets asked, what's the most important law? He turns around and this is what he says. Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your strength and with all your mind. And love your neighbor as yourself. Well, that is huge. And that looks like so many different things. And, you know, thinking, well, if God made the world and he loves it and he's asked me to look after it, then a good way of loving God is to obey him and to do some of that and to figure out what it looks like for me to love the planet well. Because that's loving God well in one particular way. But the bit that I really want to focus on is this love your neighbor as yourself. Like we've been saying, like I just mentioned, this boring sciencey term, ecosystem services, nature gives us really good things. Nature gives us the things that we need to flourish. And it does that at the moment, in a lot of cases, for free. Great, so if we're called to love people, well, the truth is that climate change, for example, is an intensifier of injustice. So that's pretty hard to hear in a lot of ways, but all of the things that are already unequal in the lives of people on Earth get made much worse by the effects of climate change. So, for example, we're thinking about, a lot of scientists are saying that the more that the environment heats up, the more that we will see extreme weather events. Okay, but we live in the UK, and we're not going to see that many extreme weather events. And if it does, it might just get a bit wetter sometimes and a bit sunnier other times. And that's not a massive impact for us. But for people who live in lowland areas, in countries where they don't have the money or the government willing to build, for example, houses that can withstand a typhoon or a hurricane, then an extreme weather event for them is a matter of life and death, and it's a big deal. And I know it's hard because we're so far removed from that, and we do care. But there are so many other things going on in our lives that it's, you know, it's hard to know what we can do. But the truth of the matter is that climate change at the moment is affecting the people who are least responsible for it. It's impacting people who don't live in developed countries, who don't burn fossil fuels, who don't really have much access to electricity. And it's impacting them really negatively. And I think, as Christians, that has to matter. That is an issue of justice and injustice. And God doesn't like it. Like, he loves his people, and he doesn't want to see them come to harm. And so it's a false division if we want to say, well, either care for the planet or care for people. Like, helping the planet is a really important way of loving God's people. And that might mean, you know, loving our neighbours who live near a river and you don't really want to see their house flooded or their livelihood damaged. It might mean that you are loving people who live on the other side of the world, who, like I say, don't have a political voice or don't have the same kind of life as we do, the same protection that we have here. Or it might also mean loving future generations who are going to come and live on the earth after we are. But the bottom line and the good news of this is taking good care of the planet is a really, really, really good and effective way of taking good care of other people and people that you never have to see in your life, because it's all about, you know, you making little changes in your life will actually impact and love people who live hundreds and hundreds and thousands of miles away from you. So I want to encourage us today, rather than believing in a God who... No, that's not what I want to say. I want to say, instead of us thinking, well, as a Christian, I am called to love people, and that looks like me focusing completely on the people all the time, that actually, sometimes if we take a step back and we look at the bigger picture, and as Christians, we believe in a God who called the whole of creation very good, human and non-human together, we can actually think, well, how can I use the things that I love and my creativity and my passions and my intelligence to seek to find a way that ensures that all creation can thrive together? And that's people and that's nature. Okay, so just a bit of a recap here on where we've got to so far. God's relationship to the planet is that he made it and it glorifies him, and he loves all of it. Humanity's relationship to the planet is that we're intrinsically connected to it both in terms of our origin and in the way that nature provides abundantly for our needs. Thanks be to God. And as children of God, we're invited to take care of the planet, not as an optional extra, but at the very heart of reflecting the image of God. And also at the heart of reflecting the image of God is this call to love one another. And so we need to see that our impact on the planet impacts the lives of those God has asked us to love. Okay, but what about my final question? Because we're tired and busy people, and we're not millionaires, as far as I'm aware, and we're not the Prime Minister, and we're probably already engaging with really important aspects of living out our faith in so many ways, and loving one another, and loving people in our community, and we have busy lives already. So how can we find the space to care? And how can we find the hope that we need to look at these big issues and not feel hopeless or paralyzed? And what can we actually do about any of it? Well, I'm not really going to give you a nice one-size-fits-all answer to this, because I think it's going to look really different for each one of you. And I don't want to insult you by coming in here and saying the only way is to all become conservation scientists, or to all go and live in a cave somewhere and never use electricity again. Because I think that's wildly unrealistic and not what God has in mind for his people. It's not about feeling guilted into acting in a particular way, or having to suddenly and completely change your lifestyle and all of your life goals. This taking care of the planet, like most aspects of how we choose to represent God and carry his love to the world, I want to say it's really between you and God. God has given you, each of you, your own specific gifts and talents and passions. And it's up to you to recognize those gifts, to cultivate a relationship with God that explores those gifts and seeks to use them well to love people and to love the planet. And so I want to encourage you to weigh up, what gifts do I have and how can I best use those gifts in the way that God intends? And for some of you, when it comes to taking care of the planet, that might mean something really big. That might mean vocation. That might mean, oh, you know what, maybe I want to go and work in land management, or maybe I'm into politics, and maybe I want to actually do more to campaign for environmentally friendly policies. Maybe I want to take a stand and ask the government to do something, or maybe I want to get involved in government, or maybe you're already involved in government. Maybe you're an engineer or thinking about engineering and you go, well, maybe I could be involved in coming up with the next way of producing energy that doesn't involve burning fossil fuels, but actually is really an efficient way of, you know, harnessing the power of the sun or something like that. And so for some people, this is their main thing. They are called by God to make this sort of the thing that they do with their life in so many different ways. But for everyone else, it can be things that are simple, and it's an activity that just falls within the wider lifestyle of a Christian who is seeking to love and honor God. It's kind of just little changes that we make that, you know, like we do with everything, you become aware that you're doing something that doesn't really honor God, and you take the steps that you need just to change something slightly and make that difference. And that's a lifelong journey with all of us, isn't it? It's that gradually becoming more and more the person that God intends for us to be. And so it could be something really simple, like continuing to persevere with the confusing recycling boxes and everything that sometimes just feel like a waste of your time. Or it might be saying, hey, you know what? Bamboo toothbrushes are really cheap now. Why don't I get one of those next time instead of buying another expensive Colgate plastic toothbrush? You know, just a tiny tweak. Or why don't I get milk delivered in glass bottles for a month and see how that affects me and see whether that's a massive pain or whether I could actually continue to go with that long term? Or, you know, it's about realizing ultimately that we have a voice and we have a power in terms of where and how we spend our money or our time. And realizing that these small tweaks, like a bamboo toothbrush, are actually casting a vote. That's one small step at a time, people standing up and saying, hey, I'm not really happy with using plastic when I think there's alternatives. Or, hey, I'm not really happy with using fossil fuels all the time. If there's a renewable energy provider, maybe I could go with them instead. And all of those things, they're not insignificant. You don't have to change everything and feel convicted because you haven't managed to cut plastic out entirely from your life. You could just cut one plastic item out a month and gradually build it up. And you'll see that actually that isn't massively impacting your lifestyle. It's just about habits and mindsets and things that just gently change along the way. And actually, that's not insignificant. It feels insignificant because we look at the amount of plastic in the ocean, or we look at the scale of climate change, and we think, how can one little thing that I do make a difference? And it sounds cliche, but it's true. If we all make little steps, then that's adding up to have these massive consequences. And so, for example, a load of people last year decided to do plastic-free Lent. And so they just tried to cut as much plastic out of their lives for this, for the period of Lent as possible. And it got to the point where I was going into supermarkets and being like, oh, could I have that in this foil that I've brought along, or could I have it in this brown paper bag instead? And they would say, oh, are you one of these people doing plastic-free Lent? And it made me realize that it wasn't just me, there was a whole community of people out there doing something. And the funny thing is that scientists have been saying for decades that plastic is a problem. Okay, and that it's going to become a massive problem. And no one has listened. And the government said, oh, well, maybe by 2050, we'll try and cut a little bit of plastic use out. And that was the most that scientists had managed to get in terms of progress. David Attenborough does one documentary, okay? And suddenly, everyone goes, we're going to go plastic-free for Lent. And then there are these big companies going, gosh, people are willing to change where they buy things. They're willing to order something online that isn't plastic, or, you know, go to the co-op and buy their plastic-free tea bags or whatever. And it suddenly becomes clear to companies that they either need to cut out plastic themselves or they're going to lose business. And so they start to do that. And at some point, eventually, the government realizes as well that all the companies want to change and are working to change, and they're left behind looking a bit silly. And so suddenly, over just a couple of months last year, because enough people got involved, we saw this massive change. And it's something that's still continuing. We're seeing progress with these huge companies that up until now have not taken any attention and paid any attention to the scientists going, plastic's a problem. But they listen to people, they listen to that vote of where people will spend their money or their time. And so I want to encourage you that those small steps, they actually do make a difference, and that there's a lot of hope there. Okay, so look, it looks very different for everyone, and I'm really happy to chat with you afterwards if you want to talk more. But really, I would encourage you to think about it and talk to God about it and weigh up, what can I do? What little thing that doesn't overwhelm me can I have a go at trying for a bit and see how it goes, and keep talking to God about it and keep refining? But for now, and I'm drawing to a close, I really want to encourage you, because I think, you know, we hear about the injustice, we hear about people you know, suffering on the other side of the world because of issues like climate change. And we think about the future, and it looks overwhelming. It looks really scary. And for me, like, sometimes that leaves me feeling quite paralyzed. It leaves me thinking, like, how can I act? Like, it's not going to make a difference. But God has asked us and invited us to get involved. He's on our side, and he wants to see environmental justice done, both for his creatures and for the humans living on Earth. And he empowers each one of us in our different ways, which comes back to being made in the image of God, and also all of the gifts and the particular passions he's put in our hearts. And part of this invitation to get involved is that we're made in the image of Creator God, as I've said, and we're creative, we're imaginative, we're passionate, we're loving, we're kind, and we are all so different. And yet, if we engage in our own way with our particular role as stewards of God's creation, there is so much hope here on earth. There's so much hope for going plastic-free within the next few years. You know, we could see amazing things on earth. But as Christians, looking beyond that, I would say that our act of seeking to glorify God, seeking to see his kingdom come and his will be done on earth today, that is an important aspect of us looking forward to the future. It's looking forward to this incredible future where the kingdom of God will be fully established and where creation will be fully renewed and restored once and for all. I just think, I don't know, if you read the final couple of chapters of Revelation, it's amazing. It's astonishing and it's so beautiful. And we refer to it as future hope. But I just want to encourage you, it's not a future hope in terms of, oh, I hope that will happen. Like, no, it's going to happen and it's going to be wonderful. And my hope and my prayer for you as I finish today is really that this future hope, this is actually going to happen. God's kingdom will be established. God's creation will be restored. I hope that that hope frees us from any fear and frees us up to act now in faith. And that together, we as God's children will find a way to live out what it means to be a Christian that shows and shares God's hope and his love with the whole planet, human and non-human alike. And this hope and love, that's something that we all can carry today. And that's something that only comes from knowing God as our wonderful, loving Creator, King, and Saviour. So thank you so much. Thank you.